Welcome to another reality show hosted by Golden Hawk. Join Golden Hawk as she travels down the rabbit hole exploring many of life's mysteries and adventures. Because here at another reality show, we're not afraid to let our imagination soar and our intuition run wild. So relax, get comfortable, because for the next 2 hours, we're inviting you to open your heart, spread your wings, and fly. And now, here's Golden Hawk.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Welcome to another reality show. Yay! The night is here where Daniel and me get to talk about portals. Yay! I am so excited about tonight's show. First, let me welcome the enchanting and always beloved Daniel Jacobs to the show. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Well, thank you very much, Goldie. You know how I love to be stroked, so keep on.
Well, I'm just the girl to do that.
That's right. I'm the big Leo lion, and we love to be petted.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, your reconnections information, your beautiful soul, your obvious level of compassion, it's just such a joy. You know, there really are, there are many voices out there pointing the way, but there are few voices out there that I feel are for me, let's just put it, that are pointing my way. And your voice is one of the voices that I've always been attracted to, always felt a deep resonance with. And like I said to you when I invited you to come on, if it ain't deep, it ain't worth going.
Yeah, there you go. That's the philosophy.
Yeah, I like going deep, man. I do. And tonight we are definitely going deep. I recently, in fact, shucks, just this week, came across your Transportal Energy Gates in Space and Time, which was a 3-part series. I came across the articles, and it was striking me as, Big Ben. Big Ben at noon, man, high noon, gonging, going, you've got to talk about this, because these portals really feel like, to me, like, it's kind of like it's the underpinning or the subliminal, the unconscious truth that's kind of moving everything. It's the current under life, and I really believe that if people have at least the awareness of them, and then, you know, we can go even a step further, you know, somewhat of an understanding of them, you know, it can take someone, you know, out of fear, you know, into the party.
Yes, indeed. And the cool thing to know is that transportals operate in our lives regardless of whether we're aware of them or not. We're all traveling. We are all, rather than individual beings, we might say we're like little spaceports and little pneumatic tubes. If you ever see a grid, piece of grid work, they look like they have all these little squares. I just like to think of those as pneumatic tubes like they have in a big office building. And they take their little letters and they'll stick them in there, and the pneumatic tube will take it where it needs to go. And there's a portion of us, sometimes beyond our conscious awareness, because of the veil of forgetfulness that we all have when we first come in, that administrates all that. And then little by little, as we gain more and more experience and become stronger in our personality and in our sense of self, ourselves, as it were, because we're multidimensional too. We're able to handle more and more information about how things are. I think a lot of people get very impatient about, I want to know all my gifts, I want to know it all now. But if you were to really see the extent of who you are, it could be quite mind-boggling. So fortunately, we have portions of ourselves that wisely administrate how that comes to us and when.
Yeah, huh? Well, and ultimately, patience and perseverance are truly qualities that are part of the eternal journey. You know, there's quality, you know, in those qualities that are, you know, make it the benefit of not having what we want, you know, when we want it or even ever. You know, sometimes some of the things we want. Because I talk about on my other show with Janine, you know, we often speak about how the things we've been rejected from at this point, really, you know, it's a compliment that we've been rejected. You know, we're kind of
Well, I mean, we get disappointed in the ego self, but sometimes those are very, very important safeguards for one or the other of the connection. And it, sometimes it means not now. Sometimes it means not ever. But or sometimes it means we've already completed this. You don't have to do it again. This is just a fast review. That's a good one, too.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know what? I love your perspective. Okay, so if you're open to this, this is what I would like to do because, you know, this is really the information in this article, in my humble opinion, and you know, concurred, this is pretty critical stuff, this portal, transportal, multiversal movement, because it's happening, and I think on many levels it's happening, and we don't know what's happening. But I think people who want it to happen, who don't think it's happening, need to know that it's happening anyways. And, you know, there's just so much, good, juicy understanding by talking about it. So what I would like to do is, you know, I have the first two articles printed out in front of me, and you've wonderfully, you know, congregated paragraphs about the importance of energy gates in space and time.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to read each paragraph, but what I'd like to do is take each paragraph and have you share what you know, and it can, if it enters into dialogue, wonderful. If it ends up just being, you know, kind of you sharing, and then it's complete, we can go on to the next thing.
That'd be fine.
Is that cool? Okay. Okay.
What I want to do before you start is give you a little background on how this came through.
It's kind of
interesting. It was
absolutely.
The first transmission came through right after 9/11 in 2001, and it was one of the first transmissions that was mounted up on Spirit Web, if you remember that.
Of course,
wonderful,
I was there.
Wonderful historic site that was administrated by Rene Mueller in Switzerland, a great guy who's still around, but you know, he did the work and he was ready to be done with it, and it moved on. And it was such a service for people. And it was right after 9/11 that I channeled a piece about terrorism, and he loved it, and he put it out there, and then he started posting things up. And so the Transportals series went up as three separate transmissions, and it was actually one of the gateways into Reconnections Network getting more international, because it wasn't too long after that we also began having our conclaves over in Scotland and Glastonbury and various places. But
wow.
A lot of people didn't know about us until Spirit Web, so we owe a big vote of gratitude to Rene and his awareness of the work and the value of it.
Right on. Thank you, Rene, because I was also on Spirit Web, absolutely.
What a great guy. What a talented man. He's a great artist, too, in his own right.
Nice.
So what would you like to do?
Okay, I mean, I'm just going to start from where you started and at the first, you know, bolding letters. Okay, so journeys through time and space. Transformation begins with two elements.
Yes,
disorder
and
disintegration. So if you could speak on that, that would be great.
Now, this one is beautifully portrayed and actually kind of entered my consciousness as a basic idea when I saw the original movie Stargate with James Spader.
Okay.
And the guys were, you know, they love to go to the movies with me. And I've had them, I had my first experience with a Native American reconnection when I went to see Dances with Wolves, and he followed me home from the theater.
Oh, wow.
And the next morning, I get up in the morning, and I sense this presence over me that's waving something in front of me. And I just sort of spoke to my spirit and said, "Who are you and what are you here for?" And he said, "We hang out at the theater and we watch for people who are responding to this movie." This is Dances with Wolves, if you'll remember.
Of course.
And he said, "What I'm doing is an energy clearing on you and sort of like a blessing." And he was only there for a short time, But I thought that was cool. I, you know, spirit guides go to the movies too.
I
saw
right
a beautiful
on.
Posting on Facebook that, today that said, "Is it possible that Earth is actually a reality show for aliens?"
That's a great line.
And so we certainly have our share of drama here, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
But
oh,
the
yeah.
idea of disorder and disintegration was portrayed beautifully. If you'll remember when the first time James Spader's character, who's also, his name was Daniel Jackson, he stood in front of the energy gate and he put his hand through it. It was like water. And I actually put a YouTube of this up on the thing because it was so beautiful. But as he put it through, he could feel the tingling and he pulled his hand back. But then there was a space in which he decided to just go on through. And at one point, he was broken down into the basic elements, sort of like they do on the transporter beam on Star Trek, transported through the portal, and then they even have a beautiful depiction of that, and then reintegrated at the destination point, which is what they do in Star Trek II. And so everybody's familiar with a transporter beam. They're just not aware of the fact that that is a reality in the lives of those who are doing all this work and many others. But it happens so quickly, and our minds are so acclimated to harmonize this. It's almost like internal cinematography, to harmonize the process so that the emotional body isn't shattered by that disintegration, transport, and reintegration process. It happens literally in the blinking of an eye. So you're there, you're here, and then you're there, and maybe to paraphrase the new Hobbit movie coming out, here and back, there and back again. You know, sometimes people move that quickly through portals. It's faster than the speed of thought in many instances.
Mm.
And so disorder and disintegration, where you have a complete breakdown of that, your particular identification with this body as self, and then you move through that portal just as a picture lesson, and then you re-establish your identification with the alternative universal body. You know, like we have bodies in several universes functioning at the same time.
Right.
And each of them has their own ego administrator, just like what you think of as here. And you just simply change your definition of self from this self to that self. And then the veil drops down, and you forget who you were there, but you remember who you are here. And so the disorder and disintegration is an important part, the chaos energy, because as you know from your own experiences, how wonderful it is, a jolt it is when that chaos energy goes through. We call it passion, but it really is a... It's very random. It takes all trains of thought and kind of derails them in favor of reforming and refashioning into something else. And the big thing when chaos happens is let go of your expectations, let go of your attachments, and trust, you know, that it's all going to work out.
Definitely.
And it says it produces confusion. Now, the idea of confusion, removal of fusion with this area, and then transport, and then refusion at the new location. So to be confused means to lose your grip for a minute, and sometimes a minute is all it takes. You go, you're there and back. And sometimes you can, you know, being there, you could be there for 70 years and come back and never know you left. So that's what happens. And when we get into the third series where we talk about building astral bridges, that will people actually do that. Only usually by the time you're doing that consciously, you will have an experience of making a visitation to an alternative self. It'll be more experiential than actual.
Well, but isn't part of what you share in this is that this is all real?
Oh, of course, yes. It's all happening. Of course, here's the deal. People believe what they believe. And what they don't believe, they'll just simply build a little reality box that excludes that. And the question is do you want to live in your reality box and have the lid on? or do you want to open up and allow in more possibilities? I think that it's that's part of our process of evolution. When we find ourselves being anxious about the amount of juice that's pouring through our spirit, and the possibilities sometimes get boggling of the mind, sometimes we'll just simply say, well, that's not real, you know. It's very common for people to say, it's just your imagination. Well, the imagination is a real place. It's actually a buffer zone that exists between 3D and alternative reality. It's that place of kind of gray area that's a question, is this real or is it not? And it's that doubt factor that keeps you from being super excited and overstimulated all the time, see?
Right, well, and you also speak of doubt in the second one being, you know, not to get ahead of myself, but it, I guess we'll let this kind of unfold on somewhat organically. Doubt
yeah,
plays...
Yeah.
Oh, it's up to you, or do you want to
No,
say...
No, I whatever you want to do, it's fine.
I always have a plan, and then, you know, it shifts on a dime, because, like, that's the way
that's
it
fine. A dime, a quarter, whatever.
Whatever we can afford.
Whatever we can afford in the moment.
I mean, we'll cover everything. That's why everything that needs to be covered will be covered. Because you speak about how doubt, and it's so beautifully, doubt and hesitation is, and I'll let you explain it, but doubt and hesitation play huge parts in disease.
Yeah.
Can you share more on that?
And disease plays a huge part in, you might call it the brakes in your multiversal ship, so that if you want to put the brakes on, all you do is introduce the idea of doubt, fear, hesitation, that kind of thing, anxiety, and automatically you'll slow down. And then when you move back to a state of neutrality, which we'll be talking about in Series 2, the elevator of the multiverse, we'll talk about how the role of neutrality pays, where you just don't have any attachments to it. You just say, oh, isn't that neat? You know, instead of it is good or it is bad, it is. That's it.
Right.
So, but that would then be an accelerator. You move to a neutral place. And so if a person wants to put their foot out on the ground and drag it a little bit, slow the thing down, then all you got to do is throw a few doubts in there. What will my friends think? Will I lose my job? Will my relationship go away if I get too deep into this? And you can just imagine the accelerator on your car just go slowing down as you find the right speed for you in that moment. So when they say it's all good, well, I like to say it just all is. But when people say that, you know, they'll believe what they want, they'll allow what they want, and then they'll build a little reality box that'll slow things down too.
Yeah, God bless those boxes.
Yeah, those boxes. We don't want to get away from our boxes until we're ready, because then we feel like we're naked on the middle of a plane, like Neo did when he got the news from Morpheus. It's like, what did he do? He threw up.
Right, right.
And so all of a sudden he's standing there in the middle of this empty space, what they call the... What did they call that, the environment or the program or whatever it was?
Oh, yeah, the teaching program, one of the teaching programs.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden there's a chair there and a TV and Morpheus is standing there. So we can decorate it with whatever we need to. And, again, that happens even sort of in reverse from what people think. You know, they think that you have an empty canvas and you add things to it. But really what happens is that your canvas is completely full with everything and your veil of forgetfulness is put up in order to filter out the everything and leave only the something that you wish to look at.
Oh, wow.
That's how creation takes place. We don't create our reality out of nothing. We create it out of everything and we pare it down until we get to the something we want to play with.
You know, and I just have to say from a sidebar, and that would be yet another thing today that I am becoming aware of or, you know, being exposed to, how opposite this this dimension is.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of things here that are diametrically opposed to what we're being taught by the 3D
yes.
consciousness.
Yes.
And why? Because if we were to actually turn around, we'd really speed up and we wouldn't be ready for it. So we make up a story, which is becomes our reality box, which becomes our collective reality or consensus reality, and we all agree to it, and then we all get a big box. I remember that that commercial about Godzilla where the little dog goes, "I think I need a bigger box." And when he saw Godzilla, because he was going, "Get in the box," and then and all of a sudden he realized what he was talking to and who he was talking to. That's kind of how we are when we begin to expand. We get that vision, I think I need a bigger box. And so we do. We create a bigger box. But it's not always a good idea to get rid of our boxes. We just expand them like a bubble that expands out in all directions. It's just we ride the edge of that bubble, but the bubble's still there.
Right, well, and that's the whole idea of integration, right? Integration is always taking things in. It's not about, you know, releasing. I mean, releasing is really about becoming neutral about something that's already within us.
Right. And really what you're releasing is you're releasing that edge of the box.
The filter, right.
Yeah, the filter. It's, you know, some people think when they release something or clear themselves, what they're doing is making it go away. But actually, all they're making go away is their separation judgments and view of it.
Right.
That's going away.
Right on. So I would imagine then, as I am starting to see these opposites, that would kind of be, you know, and it feels very organic. You know, I won't say I have no fear, but it feels comfortable for me. So it's kind of, you know, my awareness that I'm ready to go a little faster, you know.
You've got an ability to digest it, and as you digest it, it doesn't make you ill. You don't end up throwing up what you get. You integrate it. It nourishes you. You move on.
Right. Even though I must admit, I do have nausea, but you know, I deal with it because I want my world to be right side up. I really do, or maybe upside down. I just want alignment.
Mm-hmm.
With what is, and that feels very much organic. It feels like Earth herself, not just Earth, but the and in the article you actually wrote, I'm not sure, I don't remember which part, I think it's part three, that the fact that the universe is in the photon belt, so the placement of the Milky Way galaxy at this point is also incongruency for us to kind of go back into alignment, you know, as a whole, you know, the whole kabang, you know.
Exactly.
Meaning, right. So.
Yeah. Well, and even if you don't want to call it the photon belt, there's everybody seems to have their own labels and their own mental
center.
Model for it. You know,
okay.
But whatever they want to call it, it's there and it's allowing
Agreed.
Assisting
yeah.
and birthing and all kinds of. You just can. I love metaphors, but I mean, sometimes I just drowned in them.
right on. I hear you. But right on. Okay, so, and I agree. That's why it seemed like when I read the series, it just feels so right for people to be aware of, you know, of this information. All right, so, and with that, let's go to the next paragraph. You did beautiful, and, you know, as it'll just unfold as it does. We'll go to linear, and then we'll go, we'll go schizophrenic, you know, because Goldie's all of it.
There you go. Yeah. Schizophrenic and shamanic are, you know, it all depends on how you look at yourself. You can either be afraid of your gifts, or you can be happy about them, and that makes the difference between a schizophrenic or a shaman.
Right on. You know, and one thing I am taking note of is, throughout my life, I believe there's been a part of me that has wanted to go a little faster. And it's so funny because, you know, I did coke for 12 years and I did Holosync for 10 years. And I truly am getting now, after those 22 years of those choices, that what I really need to do now is really just sit and be with whatever comes up. Be with the good stuff, be with the pain. You know, I'm very much connected to the self-empowering virtues of being here now and being conscious and being aware, or as my good friend Janine always says, being sober, but not sober from a non-drug or alcohol point of view, but sober in the sense of I'm ready to face this truth, you know, the truth that seems to want to come home right now, or that has wanted to come home. I'm just now ready to say, okay, now it's a, you know, my building's strong enough to house you.
Well, you know, the interesting part about drugs or religion or work or relationships, whatever it is we want to put our sense of obsessive focus on,
okay,
that becomes a decelerator of our awareness and our expansion enough. It's like a break. It also helps ground us to the planet, even if you take a psychedelic that turns your experience into something really spacey and weird and maybe even wonderful, you're still assigning the responsibility for that experience to the drug.
Right.
Which means you're forgetting that you are the one. Like Salvador Dali was once overheard saying, I don't take drugs, I am drugs. You know, and that
was look
his,
at his paintings.
His
yeah, that's amazing. He did that without drugs. Clearly. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And wow. So and he basically said, I am not insane. And of course that they always say that. Everybody says I'm not insane as they're putting you in the padded room. But
yeah.
he really believed it, and what happened is he moved into this incredible creative space, and his paintings reflect that. I mean, the persistence of time and the
many
different things that he created that were so landmark. But he had this kind of cocky attitude, sort of like James T. Kirk on the Enterprise, you know. I don't believe in no-win scenarios. Yeah, you don't believe in no-win scenarios, you always win.
Right.
That's, you know, simple as that. But the point is that whatever attitude is sort of like what it determines your altitude in terms of expansion. Attitude and altitude. If you carry an attitude of foreboding or dread, then you're going to manifest environment that supports that, because for whatever reason you want to use that as a slowing down device for now.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the 70s, I was doing fundamentalist Christianity as a religion, and I got a lot of comfort in certain areas, but I also slowed down a lot on what I would allow into my space. It's all pretty compacted into the book. So you focus there. That was actually kept me more grounded. And then in the 80s, I began to open up to other things, not to the exclusion of the Christ story, but to the expansion of the allowing in of other things, too, so that eventually the all-one message. The all-one message is inclusive, not exclusive. And so we're not here to take anything away from anyone. We're here to allow more to come in, more possibilities, more options, more experiences.
Yeah, and, you know, it's so funny. Who knows that better? You know who knows that so well? The infants. Boy, they
yeah,
just know
they
more. They pick it up, like, by 6 months. I can look at a baby that, you know, if I've been hanging out with the baby, you know, during feeding, you want more? Yeah. And they'll nod. You know, their body language will, yep, I want more. I'm tickling them. You want more? Yeah. You know, it's like so funny, you know, what they said, that book, everything I learned in kindergarten or something.
Yep.
That's what that reminds me of.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, the kids, it's all very basic with kids, which is why kids also initially become a grounding experience, incredible grounding experience, not a distraction by any stretch, but just something that helps you in your grounding.
Absolutely.
And then as they grow and as they mirror back aspects of our shadow self, and that includes the good stuff as well as the darker things, as they mirror those back, then we have greater opportunities to grow. So it starts out as a grounding thing, and then the other side of it is your kids can help you fly, too.
Right on.
They open the imagination. They carry that incredible energy that just goes every which way, and you get to go with them if you want.
Absolutely. Some of my best best experiences when I'm doing my art. And boy, I'm so glad I said that you could sneeze all show. I have a tickle in my throat that doesn't want to quit. So if you hear those beeping, it's me putting me on mute so you can talk and I can cough, just so you know.
Yeah, we were talking before the show about all this this nasal sinus stuff going on. I said, are they dusting up there again or whatever they do? And my son has had it too, and I've been sneezing. I'll usually do one or two or three, but I've been doing six at a time sometimes. So
yeah.
I said, if I blow you away, then just forgive me and bless me. I'll come back. And then all of a sudden, I must have opened up your gate because now you're sneezing.
Well, let's see. I got a tickle in my throat, but I'll be honest with you. I tend to get this. My throat chakra has always been. Well, and actually, I'm working on letting go of chakras, so I don't want to say that. But my throat usually is, you know, I'm very energetic through my throat.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have very expanded guests on, there will be times that, you know, my throat goes.
Yep. I understand. Know exactly
yeah.
what you mean.
Yeah. So right
yeah.
on, babe.
So what
okay,
are energy gates? You know, one
yeah,
of the
exactly.
things here that's important is to understand what they are, because
exactly.
a lot of people have them all around them and they don't understand what they are. And one of the, like, you could be walking through a library. A library is like a spaceport when you talk about possible energy gates. Each of those books, I mean, a lot of people have had the experience of walking into a bookstore or a library and have a book literally fall into their lap or their hand.
Right on, yeah.
And then, or to pick up a book, and the minute that they open the front cover, they'll see a picture or a word or whatever, and immediately they can feel themselves being carried away. And interestingly enough, when you talk about tonal communication, T-O-N-A-L, mm. you're not so much talking about what do the words mean, as much as where do the words take you in your mind? What does it bring up for you? Where does it take you? And that's an energy gate. So a word can be an energy gate. A picture can be an energy gate. Who hasn't walked through an art gallery and been pulled into a photograph?
Mm.
I even think I saw a great artistic rendering of that out on the net, where a gal was standing in the art gallery and all of a sudden her head's halfway into the painting.
Yeah. I've actually used that for when I say goodnight sometimes on Facebook. You know, the blending of the two realities, you know, the painting taking the woman over, the body not taking it over, but the blending of the two. Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
And then, of course, people are energy gates. Locations are energy gates. I've been to Stonehenge several times and
nice.
Sat up with my back against the stones. You have to make special arrangements to do that these days, but we did. And it, you know, it takes you. Let me tell you, it takes you. Avebury's the same way, which is the Avebury's got the guardian energies that stand before the energy gate, which is the henge. And that's
What is this place? Avebury.
It's called Avebury, and it's a stone circle, and the stone circle is not too far, maybe 10 miles, maybe even less, before you get to Stonehenge on your way through there.
Oh, I see. Okay.
From Glastonbury Tor. And
okay.
So when you get to Avebury, you see all these great stone, it's a stone circle, and you see each one is a little like a stone statue. There's a legend over there that says that these are actually people represented here as stone statues, but they're actually alive in another dimension. They're just there to indicate that they're guides that help people determine whether or not they're ready to go more deeply through the portal. You might say they're like customs agents for the energy gate, which is Stonehenge. So we had someone in our group when we first went there the first time, and I was walking, just looking deeply into one of the stones. And if they aren't shaped like people, they have drawings in them or like carvings that look like people. You know, so it's not
okay.
too hard to use your imagination and see a person there. You know.
Okay.
And this woman comes up to me and she says, I just talked to one of the stones and it said, you've had enough now, go home. And that was, I said, I think maybe you better go to the car. You know?
Right.
So she actually went to the coffee shop. They have a coffee and a gift shop there.
Okay.
And actually by the time we got to Stonehenge, Stonehenge was closed that day, so we could only see it from the street.
Mm.
And I think they did that for her because it wasn't a big deal for me to jump the fence with my consciousness and go into the stones. But for her, it might have been too much, you know.
Right.
So
right.
At that point in time, you just honor the timing of it, and you trust that those customs agents know their job.
Mm.
Being so close to Canada here, I've had experiences with custom agents, and they can sometimes be pretty stern when you're going through.
Right, right.
If you're not their kind of person, they look you over with that evil eye and say, What do you have on your mind? Why are you going in here?
Well, no, I don't remember where it is, but I know you spoke about, you know, energy gates having exactly that there are some gates that you need passwords and some
mm-hmm.
gates you need a sponsor.
Yeah, you need a sponsoring guide to see you don't go through unprepared. So and it's interesting because dragons are mythical creatures in the minds of usual normal 3D. Dragons actually exist. There are people who work with dragons
okay.
all the time. But again, what exists for you may not exist for someone else, and that's okay. They can say
right.
they can reel it in or they can reel it out. You know what I'm saying?
You're right on. Right on.
What was I talking about?
It's all good. It's all good. Guardian sponsorship.
Oh, sponsorship. So when
yeah.
a dragon shows up, and usually a dragon is signified by fiery breath and a fierce expression.
Mm.
So it could be that it could be the lady who crowds in front of you at the checkout line at the grocery store who has halitosis, elbows you in the neck, and crowds ahead. She may be actually a dragon that's guarding an energy gate, and some people will just pick up and leave and go over to another check stand because she was there to say, don't go through here because there's energies here that may not work for you. That's why it's so important to trust. Trust what comes our way and not fight it because let it have its way with you because you never know. You never know
right.
what's being protected and what's being directed.
Right. Well, and you know, nothing has been more clear to me in the last year to 2 years that things can change on a dime. You know, like I said, making plans is almost humorous at this point because, you know, I have the best intentions and, I can be moving towards something. And, you know, like I've been taking a lot of awareness in right timing and right placement. Because it becomes very obvious to me when I'm out of, you know, when I'm not in right timing and right placement. And, you know, I'm learning to trust that, I don't even have to say, I'm just learning to trust that it's not that it's a failure on my part to get the job or, you know, it's simply that's not, because it's right timing and right placement often come for me where something has momentum. And then all of a sudden, this brick wall shows up.
Exactly.
And it's just kicking my ass. And I'm going, you know, scratching my head, going, what did I do wrong? What could I have done? And it's like, I'm really learning, don't analyze it, Goldie. Just trust it. Just
right.
trust it. Yeah.
And there really isn't anything wrong you're doing. It just may be something out of season or something that you're being inclined away from. So it's. You're in the river, you're going down the canoe, and all of a sudden the tide changes and moves you this way.
Right.
And as long as you don't have a big attachment to going that way, then you just see where it takes you.
Right. Well, and this whole journey, like, I've been on the awakening journey for the last 17 years, but I can say in the last year, definitely, I am realizing that the journey I am choosing now is not a journey that my mind or my brain is. I, I've been choosing, you know, the drugs and the holistic thing were very much, you know, I want to do this. My brain goes, now do this, make this happen, you know, and I'm learning now this, the organic journey is I know when to move because there's, it's inspired movement as opposed to, you know, I've got to do this because, God damn it, I can't be left at the back of the line. I've got to get this ascension going. I mean,
well, you never know. There's
going
to be quite a party at the back of the line, you know, and maybe you're being left back to the VIP
right?
lounge.
See, now I get that. Because, yeah. You know, and what's so funny is all the energy that I've, you know, perpetrated towards the things that I've tried to do, making sure I didn't get left behind and that I ascend, exactly what you just said, boy, chilling out at the back of the line while there, you know, everybody's fighting up there, you know, going right on. It's more relaxed. It's organic, you know. And I think when I don't think I know when I follow my organic inspirations. There's no disappointment. I can't even say there's less disappointment. There's actually no disappointment because organically I haven't attached to the outcome because I haven't, you know, put that into the soup. You know, now it's just, you know, I move and everything seems to support that. Like, you know, like my father going from a very strict man that, you know, you must pay your way or, you know, you got to get out to basically supporting me the last 2 years as, you know, I've been job hunting, but, you know, I'd find a job and go, okay, no, that's what I thought it was. And he'd go, okay, quit. Don't want, you know, go ahead, go find another. He was like, really? You know, my father's never held that space with me. You know, it's always been very rigid. And as I become more organic, my surroundings reflect that organic.
Yeah, oftentimes parents from the old traditional mindset tend to grade themselves on their effectiveness of parents as to whether or not their kids engage with society and get off and become independent at a certain time.
Yeah.
But then those old traditions didn't factor in the idea of this incredible expansion of consciousness that's happening now, which can literally suck up a person's time and energy and focus so that there are periods of time where you just have to be like the shamans of old. When they first woke up, the village would recognize a gifted person and they would just support him sometimes up to 7 years. They had this kind of shamanic illness where they needed to be attended to because their minds were being downloaded with various tones and energies that would help assist them in bridging between this reality and expanded truth. And then they would do that for the tribe. So the tribe said, "Hey, if there's somebody who can do this for us, we're gonna pay his way through college, and his college might be this 7 year shamanic sickness." So when I talk to young star kids who write me off the site and they say, "I just got out of the hospital," or "I've been on welfare," or "been on the dole," so to speak, I just go, you know, when you come into your own and you fully expand, find your passion and get connected, that thing they paid for your worth is going to be a drop in the bucket compared to what you'll be able to provide during the grand alignment, grand shift that's taking place. And the stuff that we're all providing each other in the one self of all that is through our individuated viewpoints, the experiences, the sensory data that we're collecting just from wherever we are, is being fed to that great computer, you might say, at the center of all that is, and cataloged according to, it's almost like a little cosmic video store. People will be able to check those out for all eternity and enjoy the Goldie journey. and if you're focusing on that to the exclusion of working at some department store or some other place, for a time, then again, you're following your organic wisdom, and you'll be supported, and that's one of the factors that's there. Sometimes people are uprooted and attracted places through work, and there's nothing wrong with that either, but that's the thing. There's just nothing wrong with you and what you're doing. You're just doing what you have to do to get through this big, huge thing that's happening on the planet right now.
Right on.
That's why everybody is having to go through these reinventions of self. They'll lose a job they've had for 30 years, and then they go, what do I do now? And open, expand, and see what the next thing is that you want to do. And we could have a whole conversation about spiritual gifts and motivational gifts, and that would take up too much time. We don't want to pull that away from this. But when people find their spiritual gifts, their root motivations for what they do, then they understand why they are the way they are and why they do what they do.
Exactly. That's my life is beginning to make sense. Yes. Sorry, please continue. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it. I'm saying you get in touch with your core, then you understand. It's like all the little cords come together and hook into that same place, and you go, oh, that's why this happened, and that's why I tend to do this. Even our little foibles and little things that we do, little tics and nervous things that we might think that people are judging us for, they're all indicative of some little unique connection we have. And we got to get past our sense of shame and get to that place of same, where we start to understand that we're all part of this one self. And each one brings a little something. No matter how kooky or eccentric it seems, it's part of the deal. So you just let it be and work with it. And sometimes you have to do a lot of tolerance and patience, like you said. So there's two words I want to throw out, and we can probably talk about this a little bit later because we're still going down this deal here. But you mentioned the word intention.
Yes.
And then the other one I want to work with is what's called desire.
Okay, please. Rock and roll.
And desire. But what I want to do is do that after we kind of get through this, if that's all right with you, because there's some things here that we want to cover before we get to that. But you use the word, and I got this little chill up my spine. I go, she's doing it. She's talking about it.
We always had that, didn't we?
Nice.
So, all I want to say to what you just said, first of all, is I think you just shared an extraordinary gift for many of my listeners, for them to know that, you know, what we were talking about, when things are breaking down, that there really is, quote-unquote, shamanic experience. You know, there is multiverse intelligences. You know, it is not just, in fact, not even close to what society says. Because I've been talking to a lot of friends of mine lately, and we all go, you know, if you appear to be a failure to society, you're doing awesome. You're like, right on. We're part of the new superheroes that, you know, because society on some level, if you're succeeding in society, it's becoming obvious that, you know, there's, you know, the controversy is the message that's being shared through society is, you know, the limitation. So if you're living multidimensionally and you're not accepted by society, that's a beautiful thing. You know, that they're you know, in other words, we're starting to flip the beliefs of, you know, the American dream, success, and even most definitely shame and guilt, which clearly are, you know, those are definitely the tape around the boxes.
My first teacher of metaphysics used to say, look for the should and go the other way.
Exactly.
I have a variation on that, which is the guiltier you feel, the more exciting your life probably is.
No, you said that to me from our first session, and I remember when you said that to me, there was this ultimate, it was like a waterfall moved inside of me.
Because,
so,
you know,
beautiful.
When they talk about conviction, we always tend to think of it in terms of being convicted of a crime, particularly when we talk about the usage of the word sin and sins. That's all stuff that's been put together by organized religion to administrate the masses. But when you talk about desire, and I'm bringing that term in here now.
Bring it in.
Yeah, the term desire, and when you're particularly talking about when that connects down through your mental body, your emotional body, all the way into the physical, where you actually feel moved to do something or moved away from something, then you're talking about the real essential view of conviction. It's not guilt. Guilt means that you've hit on something relevant and very important for you, and the guardians that are there at the gate, the dragons are coming out and yelling. But, you know, just like Jason or what was his name? The dragon killer, the dragon slayer. Just as he learned
Jason
to walk right past the dragon. Oh, Sinbad. It was the seventh voyage of Sinbad. It goes all the way back into the 60s. Wonderful old sci-fi movie here.
Okay.
Special effects by Ray Harryhausen. Loved that movie. You know, there was a dragon at the gate where the treasure trove was, and he learned to go right by the dragon to get in there. And that's when somebody's moving according to organic desire. You look at the word desire, what it literally means is of the father. Sire means father. So if you want to talk about desire, you're talking about something that originates from the father element within you, or what we think of as the God self. And so if you truly desire it, as opposed to being fixated or obsessed with it, that's like an addiction. That has another message to it, not always what we think about that either. But if it goes all the way down into your feet and just moves you along, there's got to be a reason. And if you have enough chutzpah, as they say, you're gonna benefit down the road if you're willing to step through those dragons and get to the treasure.
Right on. So that
but
was
desire is still something we want to cover again after we go through the elevator of the multiverse, which is where we talk about this neutrality stuff.
Okay, you want to go there first? So then let's go to the elevators.
Where we talk about the elevator of the multiverse is, if you like to think of the old department store where it's ding ding, ladies lingerie, ding ding, housewares, ding ding, ding ding, bookstore, ding ding, men's clothing, and, you know, or then ding ding, the year 2025, ding ding, the year 1614, you know, it's all there in the multiverse. All you have to do is change your attitude about it, and you'll change your altitude as you go up and down the elevator. And the cost for the ride is you have to give up your judgments and you have to change your attitude towards it. And so they've talked about a lot in various dimensions or various transmissions about the varying speeds or densities at which realities exist. So that, let's say you look at a picture of a version of reality that's dark and foreboding and scary, what Yoda would say to Luke as the dark side.
Okay.
And then if all you have to do is change your attitude and your perspective about it, and all of a sudden it changes its speed. It's like you pick your foot up off the ground. You're no longer dragging your foot. So as your energy accelerates, the lights come up. It's like how fast a film goes through a projector. It's varying speed, you see.
Okay.
When you change the speed of a film strip, the pictures contained in that film strip will change as well. And so your mind is like that filter, like the screen that's filtering in these images and putting them all together in order to create whatever it is you want. I remember a wonderful entity that was channeled out of Sedona, an extraterrestrial entity called Savizar. He used to say, the universe bends over backwards to conform itself to your idea of what is real.
Mm.
And so you put it in there, you fish for it in the sea of possibilities, and then you reel it in, and there it is, flipping on the dock, your next experience.
Right on.
But out in that sea of possibilities is all kinds of things, many of which are quite contradictory, you know.
I think
it was Walt Whitman who used to say, a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. And Walt
Whitman, what does I don't get what
a foolish consistency. In other words, the idea that everything that you believe has to be consistent with everything else is, you know, like oftentimes in debate, people will say, well, how can you say that now when you said this 6 years ago during your speech on the da-da-da-da-da?
Okay.
And of course, if he really was speaking from the highest expanded perspective, he'd say, well, that was another universe. I was in another universe when I said that. Now I'm in this universe, and I'm speaking congruent with where I am now. You know, when in Rome, you do as the Romans do, and then if you roam somewhere else, you got to change your ways. And again,
but
what are we doing?
There
we're transporting. See, we're going from place to place. And sometimes it's just a change of attitude, and all of a sudden you're completely somewhere different. Versions of the same reality, but being seen at different speeds. So as you let go of your judgment, as you let go of your hesitancy, oftentimes what appeared to be a monster turns into a prince or a princess.
Right.
That's where we get a lot of this mythology, like the Frog Prince or Sleeping Beauty.
Right.
You know, when you slow yourself down in velocity so much that that you're just afraid and shrunk back, then a lot of your gifts and abilities go to sleep. And then when you're willing to go up and kiss them, you know, like the princess did with the frog, or I guess there's a version of that where she threw it up against the wall, too. Whatever you got to do, you know, to break your mindset on it.
Right on.
All of a sudden, a frog turns into a handsome prince because you're looking at him from a different place.
Right.
And remember, of course, that the heart of oneness technology is your world is your mirror. Each person in it, each situation, each location reflects some aspect of you that needs to be integrated and understood.
Well, right on. That's why, you know, these people that are just focusing on the light, you know, making everything, you know, it's like, I've heard people say, don't be angry. You know, I mean, that actually goes into my being like shards of glass.
Yeah.
You know, and like, because I'm like, you can't ignore the authentic part that needs to express anger. Now, that's not to say that I don't, you know, recommend and invite everybody to express it maturely. You know, I'm not saying kick the dog, you know, but to say don't be angry, or the words come out, don't be afraid. You know, I kind of sit there and go, oh, really? Don't be afraid, even though.
How does,
you know,
the person don't be?
Right.
The minute you speak the subject, you know, you've got an unqualified desire to be that.
Absolutely.
Because all of a sudden it came to mind. So then you're going to sit around and go, don't be, don't be, don't be. That's a form of dragging the foot, but it certainly doesn't take away from the reality that it's there.
Exactly.
Everything is real everywhere it appears, but not everything is relevant to your journey. And so some things can just be left there, and you can overlook them. You can allow them to be what they need to be. If you have to go into a place where you're fighting it or campaigning against it, then you've got some issue with that, and you're going to want to look at it and see.
Exactly.
But if you walk right by it and say, hi, great, you know, go ahead and blow up that barn, I don't care, you know,
right,
well, that
right.
might be a little radical. I think maybe we might want to think about something like that. But usually it's stuff that's outside control. That beautiful serenity prayer says it all in one scoop. It says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Right on. Right
there's
on.
That's a neutral attitude. It's a, you know, I come from a place of drama. I come from a grandiose place. I come from a place of obsession. Just help me cool my jets and not get too into it, okay? And so part of getting on the elevator is you have to give up your various judgments. And, of course, if you can't get rid of those particular judgments, then you get off on the floor of the building that represents that judgment so that you can walk around and shop and pick up a few things and then let go of a few things, then get back on the elevator and see if if anything has changed. I love the idea as far as a practical way of handling life is when when you're presented with obstacles, you just sort of dance with them a little bit, and then you dance away. And instead of struggling with it, you go do something that you can do easily that has no struggle to it, so that you can continue the sensory experience of grace and ease. And then you dance back to it and see how it's going, and you may have to dance away several times. I call it hacky sack wisdom.
Nice.
Where you just go off in the corner and kick that little hacky sack around and do some little inane thing, or seemingly inane thing, but what you're really doing is you're just simply moving yourself out of that attached place and getting, again, you're getting that sense of neutrality, so that there isn't any gears in place that stop you or try to push you forward.
Right,
you can't
right.
push the river. So it talks here about finding a state of neutrality. And it's like we each have a scale in the back of our mind, and we talk about a subject, how neutral or unneutral are we?
Mm.
And you have the pros, you have the cons. What we used to do in the Reconnections Forum and have done in some of the conclaves is we'll get into a classic debate over something, except the way you do it in oneness is whatever the subject is that you feel inclined toward,
okay.
argue the other side, and argue it with all your might. Our first debate about that was, is it better to live a single life, or do you like committed relationships? Now,
oh,
that's
wow.
one that'll throw a log on the fire.
Yeah, if that don't get you going, boy, nothing will.
So, and then I say the couplers, you argue for freedom and for, autonomy. And
okay.
those who I like to be free begin talking about all the benefits of having history with someone, having rhythm with someone, and learning how to be tolerant and how to align with another energy like a dance partner on the floor.
Nice.
And believe me, when you do that sincerely, because what's interesting is a fully expanded mind with the multiverse as his or her resource can argue effectively for any possibility.
That's exactly right.
In other words, there's no one truth out there. There's just truth as you understand it. And the more you expand your knowledge about what could be and the way things are, the more you step outside of the box. Remember, that's that out-of-the-box thinking.
Right.
The more you can argue any side of a case and win, because what is really the win? The win is dropping down the walls of your box so that you know there's more out there that could be if you wanted it to. And then once you've become free, then you just do what you want. Do what you feel all the way down to your being. But
right.
it's not a matter of this is right, that's wrong, I should do this, I shouldn't do that. That's, you're in prison then.
Right.
So
the prison
this
of
part
duality.
Of getting out of prison.
Exactly.
So we call that the shadow challenge when you do a debate like that,
nice.
Where you come up with the topic and you can obviously tell there's passion in the room, and then you can say, okay, guys, if you want to achieve oneness, the best way to do this is find your place in the argument and argue the opposite side, and
that's
argue
great.
It as though your life depended on it.
Nice.
Because the quality of your life does depend on it.
Mm.
The more impassioned you are, the more invested you are with one side of the spectrum over the other to the exclusion of the other, the more in prison you are, because you're covered by a belief, just like Adam was in the garden. You know, he had his belief in front of him, so he had his clothes, and that's what he wore.
No, right on, right on. Well, and I love that. See, either side is prison. It's not. People think the prison is only in the dark, and it's so funny because the people that I see that are very polarized in the light don't even see their dark qualities.
Well, it was interesting, too, because Carl Jung, who's one of the Reconnections, definitely spoke to that when he talked about the story of a minister who could not ever think of anything he'd ever done in his life that was wrong. And so what happened was his daughter became a prostitute and his son became a thief.
Wow, right on.
And because what our kids do is they take our shadows and they pull them out of the closet,
mm-hmm.
and they just make us aware of the fact there's more to the picture than you know of or are willing to admit.
Mm.
That's why I love the old saying that says, if you can't keep your skeletons in the closet, you better teach them how to dance.
No, well, I'll tell you, being a nanny, boy, there's so much truth, and it's very interesting, especially as I start to become I'm long-term with some of these families, and it's so amazing how they don't see their own shadow side in their children and, you know, come to me, how can I get them to stop? And, you know, I delicately and sometimes bluntly, you know, say, well, maybe look at yourself.
I used to have people come up and say, this oneness stuff is just really fine and it all sounds good, but how is this going to change my life? And I said, you know, if you really get onto oneness and you really get into it, you may discover you don't need any changes. You may discover you're great just wherever you are.
Woo!
And that's interesting because that too is a portal. You know, when you go, I'm okay just as I am, wherever you've traveled, and again, we've got these little ships going out from us all the time in the form of feelings, ideas, projections, and so on. Each one is a little spaceship going off exploring something, and they go and come, and they go and come. And then all of a sudden you make that expression, you bring that home as like a touchstone, and everybody comes home. And it's all of a sudden you feel yourself grounded, centered, and serene, you know.
Nice.
And
nice.
That
Absolutely.
Becomes, so that is the, you know, oneness is its own, it's like its own reward. You don't have to have a reward after that.
That's, you know, I was talking to a girlfriend of mine who, she's coming to the realization of codependency in her life. And she started talking and going, you know, I need to let go of this relationship. I need to let go of cigarettes. And I basically told her, when you were speaking of the neutrality, having neutrality, and I find neutrality when I'm in nature.
Mm-hmm.
I find it to be, imagine this, natural. And I said to her, I go, no, don't worry about letting anything go. Just add nature to your palate. Just put in nature into your equation and watch how everything will just organically become something, something else. And
there's another thing, you know, as people talk about going on diets. And
okay.
That's an interesting term because it's got the word die right in it.
Yeah, no,
you know,
kidding.
But,
I've lost.
The interesting part is if your focus is always, again, on what you don't want or what you're not going to eat, that's different than if you just start putting different kinds of foods in your body and allowing your body to have the experience of new sensations and new realities. And then you also give yourself opportunities to just feel that without any kind of resolve or promise that has to happen in the future.
Yeah.
And I think it was Sandra Ray who wrote a book called The Only Diet There Is. And she had a lot of, it's probably still out there. I don't know if they've reprinted it, but you can probably get it on half.com or Amazon,
right,
the used book sales. But it was a wonderful book that talked about just letting your body and your sense of taste and appreciation experience all kinds of things instead of just focusing in on what you're not going to eat or what you must eat or you'll die. You know?
Right, right.
So if you focus
right
off there and you focus again on expanding your options and your experiences, some wonderful things can happen.
Definitely, definitely. Oh, my. That's such. If that's not the understatement of the evening.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't stop me. I was going to say my thing was never drugs or marijuana or cocaine or any of that stuff, but I sure really got going on Twinkies or donuts, you know, cakes
so
or things like that. That was always my thing, you know. But we all have our thing, whether it's cigarettes or that. It's just a way for us to establish a sense of control where really no control exists and should exist. It's more along
right.
the line of just appreciation for what is and neutrality. You sit back in the elevator. once you get into neutrality, you end up with one of those glass elevators because you get to see in all directions, like they have on the very expensive hotels.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not even, it's not, you're just not looking at four walls anymore. You're looking at glass elevators, and the scenery is great.
Right on, right on, right on.
So then we talk about the causes of disease. Now, this is a big deal.
Okay, you want to go here? Okay.
And this is where we bring in the idea of intention.
Right.
Intention, where you sometimes verbalize, I'd like to see this, or I'd like to do that. And then when you get to a place where you go, I want to see this, I want to experience that, I want to meet this person, I want. When you put an intention there, that becomes, you might say, the activation key that activates transportals. Now, what's interesting about that is just as you get the picture, if you see Stargate, when you watch him go through the Stargate, he put his hand through, but he pulled it back. But I suspect if he put it through enough where it was actually beginning to disintegrate and he held it there but didn't follow it through with the rest of his body,
mm-hmm.
then there would be a disintegration or a disorder and chaos that would happen to that body part that had been stuck through the energy gate but had not gone through completely with the rest of the body.
Right.
So people call these things rather humorously half-ass intentions. you put yourself halfway through. You're really stuck in an energy gate, and you don't even know it, where you're saying, I want this, and then there's a part of you going, but, and
mm-hmm.
that's where the half-ass part comes in.
Right.
Half is through and the other half is there, and all you got to do is turn the other cheek one way or the other, and you'll either come back out of the portal or you'll go through. But the thing is you have to decide, and some people, they'll make an intention. It's like pushing a button or when you hit enter on your computer, and then you go, no, I don't want to go to that site, and then you're trying to go somewhere else, but the computer's already going there, you see?
Right, right.
So then your computer freezes up, and it's sitting there going, what? But you told me you wanted this, and I'm already halfway there, and all this sort of stuff. So sometimes these command links are put into our consciousness that say, I want that. And so there's no blocks against it. There's no programming to block it.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, you start to go that way, and then you get distracted for some reason, and you start to go this way, or you hold off, you hesitate. And that's the old expression, he who hesitates is lost.
Yeah.
This is where parts of the body will go into a diseased state, and they'll become consumed by hesitation and doubt. And so consumptive diseases are diseases of dissipation, like, for instance, multiple sclerosis is a place where you decide to feel, but you don't know if you want to fully feel everything. And your decision to feel nibbles away at the myelin sheath that surrounds the nerves, and it mm-hmm. produces these scars on the nerve fibers so that the actual transmission of electromagnetic bioenergy gets short-circuited. And what those are from a transportal point of view, they are command links that were sent out and then short-circuited, and it caused you hurt yourself. You didn't realize you wanted this, and you didn't want that, and you were counter-programming against yourself, and sometimes it will produce a shift or a change. Now, whenever anybody does that, particularly if they do it subconsciously, it's part of the itinerary. It's part of the trip.
Right.
But if you want to understand the energy anatomy or the process, this is where the guide starts saying to us, so this is how it happens. You know, you get a desire, you put your hand through, but then you stop and you stand there. You're more focused on one side of the gate, but part of you is through the gate becoming disintegrated, ready for transport to the next place where it's reintegrated again.
Right.
And you're looking at this disease process going on. Now, when we talk about cancer, what we call a neoplasm, That would be where you've allowed in some kind of an energy based on, again, an intention or desire or sometimes even a spoken word. The energy comes and manifests, but it doesn't manifest in the format that your body is used to. It manifests as an extra little thing here. And it's a neoplasm means new growth. So this is a potential new growth that has come in, but it's been blocked and incarcerated by the immune system because there's something blocking the full realization of that. There was enough juice in you, desire, to say, yeah, I want that, but there was also enough fear and hesitancy to say, but. And so that energy sits there, and in a way, it's a form of a pregnancy. It's like you become pregnant with that desire, and then you have to decide, am I going to abort or am I going to go to term with this desire? The same thing is true, by the way, of fat on the body. Fat is a nondescript energy potential that's represented by feelings, thoughts, ideas, desires that haven't been translated into what we think of as normal flesh or action, and we call excess weight, we call it W-A-I-T.
Mm.
And so you're waiting to turn that into something tangible. And sometimes that's entirely appropriate. You know, sometimes there are people who walking around on the planet who carry excess weight, who are literally pregnant with the next place.
I can't believe you just
level.
Said that. Because I was going to say, could you carry weight like... And it will look like a pregnancy?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because that's how I carry. I look, and I have grown into 9 months pregnancy. I mean, it's amazing. I look pregnant. I mean, I could shop at a maternity ward, and they wouldn't question me.
We call it the eternity ward, actually.
There you go.
When you're bringing through multiversal things, you're at the eternity ward. And a lot of people say, I can't conceive of that. Well, you did. You conceived of it, and because of that, you got it. So it's sitting there, and you got a baby bump, or maybe a baby thigh, or a baby, you know.
Well, I'm thinking I've got life itself. It's just, it, quote-unquote, might not be a little human life. I think it's the life of the incarnation that's coming as a light body. Like it's real, but and it's me in evolution.
Mm-hmm. And a long time ago when they talked about travel, they said when you travel in the multiverse, you got to pack light because it's the only thing that can go.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so when you see something moving away from its physical and you know when it starts to crumble and fall apart, just realize you're packing to leave in
right.
that area of your life. And so that's being translated through the portal, and it will reintegrate into whatever it needs to be. I talked to one lady on the phone. She was living in New Mexico, which I thought, well, New Mexico is a very powerful place.
Yeah.
And she had this beautiful little house, and but she said, I have no money, and I'm not getting any money, no opportunity. And I said, well, do you like your house? Where would you like to be? And she said, well, I really would like to be walking down the street in New York City. I said, well, you know, that's the money issue because where your heart is, there is your treasure also, you know.
Mm.
And so when your heart is in New York City and your manifesting self wants to give you money, a big bundle of money falls on a street in New York City and some guy goes, what's this? There's a bundle of money here. Somebody picks it up and walks away because you're in New Mexico. And your heart wants you to be in New York City. That's where you're doing your manifesting. So this is where we have to really step out of our fear zone and our hesitancy and go through whatever energy gate we're being coaxed to go through, even if it means losing. You never really lose anything. All it does is disintegrate, go through the portal, and reintegrate in its next, next manifestation.
Right on, right on.
So the desire to go someplace and then the intention. Now, we're doing a fun study out on right now on Facebook where we talk about the word intention.
Okay.
Now, back in the literature, sometimes I'll use biblical references.
Okay.
Back in ancient Israel, they had this tabernacle where they felt the presence of God lived. One of the things that the Jewish people bring to religion and to spirituality is that they insist that God is a spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. So they're not big on idols. Let's put it that way. Billy
right.
Idol wouldn't make it well in this church. So,
or what is it, American Idol? No, what's our show?
Yeah, the American
show?
Idol, yeah. There, no matter if you win or not
it.
On the American
yeah, exactly.
Idol, you don't get to be there.
Right.
So American Idol. So they had this place, and it was a mobile kind of, they called it the tabernacle. And the word tabernacle means to indwell or inhabit. So
okay.
They would fold it up and carry it with them. And inside the tabernacle would be the Ark of the Covenant and a bunch of other things. And you know the Ark of the Covenant was pretty powerful if you saw Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get in there if you're not ready to go in there. That talks about you need a sponsor to get into the really big stuff. Otherwise, you get kind of fried. Those guys, they were so anxious to get in there, and look what happened to them. So anyway, what was interesting about it is they would have this tent, and this tent was supposed to be, that's where you get the expression, God's house. When God was there, there would be a light that would emanate from it. And that light was called the Shekinah glory. You know, it means the God, the presence of God, the Shekinah. Interesting, the she in there is very significant because the word itself in Hebrew is a feminine verb.
Mm.
So Shekinah it speaks more to what we think of as in the Christian, the Gnostic Christian traditions as Sophia, wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Or what we would think of the goddess Sophia in paganism.
Mm.
You might say it's just inspiration is what it is. And so whenever this presence would come and inhabit the temple, then the people would be in awe that it was there, and the high priest would go in and they would interact with this energy. When it got to a place in history where God and his people got a rift going on in the Jewish tradition, that presence left the tent, and they put up a sign up above the door that said Ichabod, which meant the glory has departed. Now, anybody who's been a channel for inspiration, and the word's right in there, the spirit inside, inspiration, you know, and the spirit in within you.
Right.
When that spirit comes upon you, it's something. I mean, it's the most wonderful feeling. It's like you go, ah, wow. And suddenly you can see everything, or you can see a big expanded version of what you had missed before.
Yes.
And so the inspiration, the channel, the energy inhabits you, like you become that tabernacle. That's the whole idea later on when they talked about the coming of the Holy Spirit. I like to use the word holy from W-H-O-L-L-Y.
Right on.
And you get the picture of the big picture, not just that which is set apart or sacred. Again, that's separation. And it had its time, but after the Piscean Age, we have the Aquarian Age, where that which was contained is now being poured out and made free, flow freely.
Right on.
So that's what happens to our inspiration and our energy. So I also think about genius, the word genius, and to me that means the genie in us.
Mm.
You know, you just rub the bottle and out he comes. And what's interesting is when you're open, when you're in that neutral place, then these things happen. They're like events that happen.
Yeah.
And it is just like the Shekinah glory or the inspiration, and it's a wonderful feeling. So the intent, you know, pictures that tent. When you have an intention, you're calling that glory, that desire, that inspiration to yourself, and then you're launching it off like you would let a balloon go up in the atmosphere with a prayer that's written on it. Or you would take a little paper boat and you'd launch it out on a river and let it go. Or you put Moses in a basket and send him down the Nile and see what happens. That was a pretty good gamble they did there.
Or you can send Daniel Jacob an email because you're flying from something you just read and say, hey, are you open for a show? And he'll come back in 10 minutes and go, right on, sister, let's play.
Let's do it. When the time's right, everything just
falls
together.
I was literally flying. Pardon? Sorry.
I said when the time's right, it all falls together. And when it's not, that's good too. And it just tells you where to turn left.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Nice. And, you know, and I do believe we've all felt, you know, if we've been on the journey to awakening, we've all felt this inspiration where, I mean, I used to get a sense, it's interesting, around the full moon. It wouldn't happen every full moon, but I would get the sense that I used to call it the golden 4 days.
Yeah.
Where around full moons, everything I would touch would turn to gold, and I'd be like, wow, I didn't understand it. I just was aware of the pattern. But I no longer, you know, affiliated just with full moons. You know, these golden moments are, you know, something, to be quite honest, every time I go to the forest, when I'm, you know, when my energy is in a bunch and within 45 minutes, I'll feel literally a significant, the best way I describe it, I drop into a state of being, and maybe it's not a drop, but that's how it feels, where I am so at peace, I'm relaxed, my mind is clear, my body relaxes. You know, I start getting the wisdom off of the sparkling lights if I'm sitting by the reservoir, or the trees will, you know, it's like communication opens up on such a grand scale where every sentient being in that forest with me is communicating, and I'm receiving the communications, but not from a, you know, a logical or rational level, just from imagination and just... it's a sentient level. You know, I just know it's happening, and, you know, I'm delighted, you know, because everything becomes, you know, that which I prayed for as a child would be. It becomes.
Yeah, the forest is your tabernacle, just like they had it.
Exactly.
And what's interesting about transportals is, as we'll see in the next chapter in the series, you don't have to go to get something. Oftentimes you can bring that something back to you. So when we talk about moving mountains, Mohammed doesn't have to go to the mountain. Sometimes the mountain will come to Mohammed. And this is where we talk about ascension is not always about people going up. Sometimes ascension also involves that which is up coming down and mixing and mingling with us. So and that becomes an accelerating experience for everyone, because the higher up you go, the lower down you must go also in order to ground the energy. And
right.
So truly expansion is not just up. It goes off in all directions like a bubble that's expanding. And you're always within the bubble, but your possibilities continue to expand and your choices continue to expand. You can do it or you cannot do it according to your desire. And that becomes the activation key. So you want to get in the car, turn on the engine, then you hit the desire button, and you say, I want that. And it's funny, too, because we used to do these exercises where we would divide a piece of paper in half, and we would say on the left side of the paper, I want this. And then on the right side, we would write whatever came to our mind at that point. So you would actually get a chance to look at your blocks or your obstacles that you have put in for that. I call it counter-programming that you put into your computer about that. And it's a great little exercise if you want to sit for a while and just put down, I want this, I like that, I deserve. You know, deserve is a great one.
Right.
Although it's much better along the line. It goes, it's all right for me to have. You know, blank. And then all of a sudden on the other side it says, yeah, but if you do that, then so-and-so might not like you anymore. And then you'd have to go find other friends and, oh, I don't want to do that. Then people will think that if I get rich, for example, people will think that I sold out my ideals in order to do it. And that kind of stuff. You know, all the counter-programming, it's a great deal. You put down the desire on one side and then you put down what comes up in response to it on the other side. And you don't have to fix it. It's just becoming aware of what's there.
Exactly. That really is it's a golden key. Awareness is, you know, because I always say once you're aware, you can't become unaware ever again. You're aware.
Well, you
it's one
can,
of those added
you
things.
Can, but it's like, a lot harder. to do.
Okay,
because people,
okay,
there, I have seen people who put, you know, rebuild their reality box for a while. And sometimes that too is an okay thing. But let's face it, you know, once you know, which is why some people, you know, they just, they know from birth. And other people wait till they're just about to transition before they let themselves
know. That's true. Well, and it is interesting because, I mean, there was who was the guy in the Matrix? You wrote about him in the thing. Who was the guy who Cypher when he said, you know, okay, put me back in, you know?
Yeah, I want a stake.
I want a stake, and I want to be powerful and famous.
I love it too. I think it was Lex Luthor who said to the aliens who are about to take over the planet. He said, "I'll help you kill Superman. I don't ask for much. Maybe Australia." And it's like, this is the contract. Give me Australia, I'll give you Superman on a plate.
That's funny.
I know his girlfriend. I know how to get him. You know.
Interesting enough,
when we talk about travel, one of the things you're going to see is navigation. So one of the navigational tools that people use, affirmations had their day. I mean, a lot of people do that. Still can work, although a lot of people have moved on to other things. At home, people will get their own personal little altars, and they'll arrange tokens and amulets and various things, icons that point the way. I used to have this. Actually, I think I still do. I used to do it, work with it a lot. I go through different things, but I used to work with this little brass pyramid. And it was just a tiny little thing.
Okay.
And, of course, the idea of a pyramid is an ascension chamber where you gather things that are all scattered and you bring them together to a point and then out the top of the point to the next place. We call that place that you go through when you leave third dimension to fourth dimension and beyond. It's called the eye of the needle. So you picture yourself taking a thread, which is your intention, putting it through the eye of the needle. But you have to be unified. It's only one thread. If you try to push more through there, it complicates the situation. So if you've managed to come down to a place of oneness where there's you and no other, or if you go two by two, it's got to be really harmonious, because otherwise you're going to have hesitancy and anxiety, and somebody's going to drag their feet, and that's going to happen.
Right.
But the intention is there. And besides, you know, when you if you go through the eye of the needle and you need to frag out, or what we call a fragment off, another partner, they'll just be there. I mean,
right.
So you don't have to take any. You don't have to take any luggage with you. Once again, pack light.
Yeah.
So what I used to do is I'd take this pyramid and I would take a picture of someone I was concerned about, or I would take a picture of some place or something that was had something going on, and I'd just sit the pyramid on top of it. And then every time I would pass it, I would just wave at it or acknowledge it or send a little energy toward it. And I saw some wonderful things take place, because it's a pyramid is an amplifier of intention, amplifier of energy, as are those generator crystals too. Little points. They come from a gathering place, and then they come together into a point. Great little healing tools, and also they can be navigators for transportals as well.
Mm.
So people will sometimes arrange their environment. It sounds very feng shui, but they'll arrange their environment in such a way so that it tells them a story about who they are and what they want. And if there is an incongruency there between their desire and their any kind of hesitancy or anxiety they have about it, then that something will happen, you know, that will reveal that, so that you can once again make the decision: do I want this or not? It's
right.
No
right.
judgment about it. Do you want it or not? You know,
absolutely.
You have to decide, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want a ticket to Fiji or not? Can you pay Can you pay the price, or is somebody going to pay it for you? What's going to happen? And so you have to, at some point before the plane takes off, you got to either be in that seat or not.
Well,
and so that's the navigation.
All right, I want to ask you something about this navigation, though. And it might be a little bit out of your language, but I'm just kind of curious. Is there a difference between the soul and, you know, our consciousness? You know, I mean, I know there's a difference, but, like, who would win the navigation? Because, like, I'm getting the sense, Goldie, just surrender your conscious, you know, my, you know, awake, you know, meaning, okay, me here now, I'm awake. That consciousness can want all it wants. You know, I can put in all the desires, all the intentions, but it seems my soul is the one that gets everything it wants.
Yeah, you just have to be careful when you're doing that, that you don't make the soul a separate entity from the experiential self, because oftentimes during times of acceleration and high intention and neutrality, we'll actually inhabit our soul, where your
okay.
desire and what someone might call the will of God or the universe or whatever is one, where
right.
there is no, there's
right.
no division at all. It's an interesting thing. It takes me back to the original Star Wars when Obi-Wan was explaining the Force to Luke Skywalker, and Luke Skywalker said, "Does the Force control us?" He said, "In a sense, but it also obeys your commands." And so there is a place in our consciousness where we can be also the navigator,
okay.
where the place where we can move into our soul self. And this is a thing called phase shifting, which we'll go over more if you look into part two.
Okay.
Phase shifting is when you move your consciousness from the perspective of the creation to the perspective of the creator or the overview. And so when you phase shift from one side of yourself to the other, or if you even come in between there where you're integrating, that's sometimes the most healing, wonderful place, expanding, wonderful place. So it isn't an all or nothing. It's like you could have the ability to be able to call the shots, but if that were the case, you would be operating from and with your soul, kind of like
exactly,
in a partnership,
exactly. Okay,
as
right
opposed
on.
To a state of antagonism, you know, trying to push the river rather than allowing, becoming the river, so to speak.
Right, right.
That's always the resolution of anything. People say, well, is it this or that? And you say, it's all of it.
Right, no, right on.
You know, you weren't in an accident. You were there in an event. It was an auto event that happened, and you were the whole thing. You were the other car. You were this. It all was you. And it all came together and made whatever impact it needed to, and we move on from there, you know.
No, right on. That's a beautiful answer. Because I know on my soul, I'm, and it's so funny, but, you know, I also know my ego wants to be in charge.
Yeah, and
so,
the ego,
you know,
the ego's whole idea is to have this experience of individuation and separation so that the essential golden hawk, the ego is assigned with the idea that the essential golden hawk will never be lost. That there will always be this aspect. There are people who talk about getting rid of the ego or telling the ego to take a hike or killing the ego, whatever you want to call it.
Right, the annihilation.
The annihilation of the ego. There's actually a whole philosophy called nihilism, which a lot of people mistake oneness for. But oneness cannot be looked at from the standpoint of oneness without also adding the idea of multidimensionality. So we are one of many, but we're also many of one.
Right.
So it's this the unity and the complexity, and we just shift back and forth to those experiences at various speeds and various formulas, and we've got an eternity of exploration to do and then some.
Exactly. No, right.
So it's
on.
Just all the mixes and the recipes that we want to put together, and we're doing it at all levels, really, at the same time. Time is just simply a filing system in the card catalog of the is, and it's good because it's like going to a part in a CD. I want to go to this scene. Okay, what time is it? You know, and then you say, well, it's October 1st on 1612, and then that's where you go on the DVD, but. It's only a filing system. There's no difference between October 1st, 1612, and September 6th, 2012. You know, it's all here. It's all now. It's all you. But we fragment it out so that we can have these experiences of dancing with it, you know.
So time would not, like in the elevator, the multiverse elevator, the past wouldn't be a lower frequency and the future be a more elevated frequency? That's an incorrect statement, in other words, what I just
said,
correct?
Not necessarily. Again, there are no incorrect statements. There's just variations of the same one thing. So what would determine whether the past is a lower frequency is whether or not you're still judging the past, or whether your past could be a springboard or a quicksand, whatever you choose for it to be.
Right.
You know, some people drag their past around like a dead body, you know, and it's
like
an anvil. And other people use their past as a way of saying, I did it once, I can do it anytime I want. So it's all how you look at it, you know? Just we said, you're either a schizophrenic or you're a shaman. It's all your attitude. You know, it's all your attitude. There's this wonderful show on TV, if people haven't watched it, it's on TNT on Monday nights in Pacific Zone.
Okay.
It's called Perception. And this guy is played by Eric McCormack, who's doing a wonderful job of portraying a neuroscientist who teaches at this university, who was diagnosed at age 22 with schizophrenia, and he's been on the pills and he's done the whole thing. And now he spends his time teaching in the school. He's not on meds, and he's constantly having experiences with what I would call spirit guides,
right,
where people show up, and he's got this friend with the FBI who uses him as a consultant on many of her cases.
Okay.
And so he uses his expanded ability. He's got all these credentials. He's a doctor. He's a professor at a big university. He's got the paperwork to back it up, so people are more likely to believe in him.
Right.
But this guy, I mean, if some people were to know everything that was going on in his life, they'd call him fruity as a nutcake. You know? But he does it so well, and I'm loving the show. It's in its first season, and it's been renewed again next year. So
nice.
I would highly recommend that show. We call these things that go out, we call them the dreams of the mass mind. I truly believe that these directors, these writers, these actors, everyone is inspired again and channeling this stuff that the oneself needs to see, the earth oneself needs to see and integrate at the right time. Just like Stargate was for me a springboard into these three series things.
Yeah.
Guy said it's just like that. They just point me to things, or they throw books in my lap, or they'll give me a word or a thought or an idea, and I'm off, you know, and then they just guide me along the way. And
right on.
They said, you can paint it. It can look like you. We don't need any kind of identity here. As a matter of fact, they made it very clear. The reconnections say, we are all those parts of your expanded self you had to forget about in order to become human. We've never been very far away from you, just far enough, and within our ranks contained all these bridge concepts which will connect you to what's called the multiverse, expanded reality, and a full comprehension of everything that you are and everything that you're doing, to the degree that you can handle it. We never want to give you more than your system can handle at any given point. We don't want to break the delicate membrane of your experience before it's time. In other words, we don't want to crack the egg and make an omelet too soon.
Well, because then it'll be in fear instead of, you know, happening in divine timing, right? Timing, right placement. There
well, let's just say you have to change your pants a few times, you know, when you get some of those experiences. Just like people who went to see those movies, you know, they get you in your seat. Like the first time I saw Aliens and that thing jumped out of his chest.
Yeah.
Yep, I should have brought a change of underwear for that, I think.
Yeah.
At least mentally, emotionally. There was only about eight of us in the theater. It was in the afternoon, and I decided to go for a matinee thinking, well, E.T. had just come out, so this might be a little extension of that. I was screaming like a little girl when
you
jumped out of there.
Just be glad no spirit guides followed you home from that one.
Yeah. They said, he's a little girl. He's not
Wolf.
Worth it. He's a little girl. He's not worth it.
You're so cute. Yeah, no, but right on. I mean, I've had some of my most magical experiences, though, happen, you know, when I was involved in car chases. And, you know, it was interesting because it came up when I was reading this, you know, I know for a fact when I was being chased by 13 people, and there was like three people in each of these cars, and you know, it was very clear they wanted to beat me up. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was clear.
Yeah.
And I was, I didn't even know I was doing the whole 7 mile ride until we finally found a cop in a gas station where I could pull off and, you know, say, okay, you know, because I said in my head, I will not stop till I'm by a cop, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just, and we were running red lights. We were on the wrong side of the road. I mean,
and inevitably, officer, look what I'm doing. Come get me.
Listen. I called 911. 911. Well, I didn't call it. The girl that was in the car with me called, and 911 literally goes, pull over. And I'm using every four-letter word in the book going, what part of being chased by 13 people don't you get? I was like, you find me. And she's like, who are you? And I go, I'd be the Toyota running down the opposite side of the road running red lights. You'll know who I am.
I love it.
I'm pretty obvious. But the thing that got noted after everything calmed down was nothing happened to the car. When I saw the route that we had taken, Daniel, we went through stone walls. We drove over tree stumps.
Yep.
Picket fences. I mean, I swear to God, I went, I don't know how we did, because there was one point where they were driving us off the road.
Yeah.
And so I went off the road onto people's lawns, and it was like, you know, we became clairvoyant. I don't know what you call when you're just, we became transparent.
You know, there's a variation on that experience, too. I've had people write me off the site saying, you think those are kind of neat experiences. Let me tell you what I was doing. And they'll talk about driving down a road, dark, rainy night, and all of a sudden they see this huge semi-truck coming right at them, like they're going to hit them right head on. And it's like, there's another change-your-pants experience, and your hair goes straight up, and you're just like, ah! And the truck will go right through them.
I've heard of that.
It's an interdimensional encounter. It's what happens when people need to have some experience. There's a couple of reasons why people have these experiences. One of them is to slap them awake so they understand that, you know, there's more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy, as Shakespeare put it.
Okay.
But then the other part is so that they'll have anecdotal evidence that they can present to other skeptics, which
right.
becomes part of the motivation for people to open. But that was a perfect example of a transportal, where you are going down the road and you are about to hit something, and then all of a sudden, you're in a completely different place.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
an example of a, and it's happening all the time. People do
yes,
it
is.
All the time.
Well, and here's the, of course, the beautiful part. The night we were driving, it was raining. I mean, because that was another thing I said, you know, once we finally stopped, I was like, I can't believe we didn't slide out of control.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was just a crazy night, and it was, it was crazy on some levels. It was beautiful on others, because, you know, the girl I was with she was with me when I've seen, we were at these chambers, and we saw these hooded beings. I've had a lot of metaphysical experiences in her presence, and she's, Alana, she's spoken with you. Remember when we used to do the Star Child shows?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
When I was in Rhode Island.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what, it was, she was in the car with me, so it didn't surprise me that, you know, it didn't surprise me that it happened with the two of us, out of all people, you know.
A co-creation, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely, because it was her friends that were, or her not friends, that were chasing us.
And all the people, you know, that are out there listening who have had dark experiences, be encouraged, because there must be something about your soul that is resilient enough, powerful enough to allow some of these literally groundbreaking experiences mm-hmm. to come through, so that you will be given not only compassion for those who go through it, but deepened faith and sensibility regarding what is, what could be, and what will continue to be. As Carl Jung once said, we don't get enlightenment by imagining figures of light, but rather than making the unconscious, bringing it to consciousness. And so when you go into the dark places and you pull that out, and it, you know, scares you at first, then after a while you're able to allow it in to a certain degree. Many of the horror movies that we go and see and so on and so forth, they're all just training wheels that we use to get rid of judgment and to open ourselves to the idea of what is, you know. And
the horror movies are about judgment?
Horror movies where people are afraid. I remember there used to be this wonderful series called Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
Where this guy with this ugly burned face would chase people in their dreams.
Right.
And when it all came down to it, there was probably four or five different chapters of them. The more they went on, the more they kind of got lame. You know, you can only do so many versions.
Yeah, you can only, at 38, it was starting to get old.
But the ending of the deal was where she stood and faced him, and she said, "You don't matter.
Right.
And whatever you do to me, it doesn't matter." And it was at that point that he just dissipated, because it was something that was really being created by her consciousness anyway.
Right.
The fact that if you have an experience of running from it, that can be exciting too. There's no set way to do it. There's no one size fits all. And I remember this last episode of Perception, Dr. Daniel Pierce is his name, the character on the show, actually met up with himself as a young person before he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And he was a cocky, smart-mouth little genius. And he at first he said, "Who do you think you are?" And the guy goes, "I'm you," before you were diagnosed. And of course, at that point, the camera pulls back and there's just him standing there. And that's what they do in the show. They really draw you into this little encounter. And then suddenly he looks at his friend, who's all also like his attendant, and he says, "There's nobody in the room, is there?" And he says, "No, Doc, just the two of us."
Wow.
And yet the fact is there is somebody in the room. It's just that only you can see him, because you've had your perception altered in such a way that you can include that and still function.
Right.
So that's what's so fun about it. And I love that kind of stuff, because my experiences are not where I've had actual visuals. That's the thing about transportals or any of this that happens, you know, sensory experience of it, what we think of as physical experience with it, that's just training wheels. Belief in it as part of the is, and just an acceptance, a knowing of it.
Exactly.
That's the part where you know that you're there. You just say, "Yeah, that's there." People write and say, "I've had this experience. Is that real or am I crazy?" I go, "It's all real." And the only one who gets to say you're crazy, what does it mean when you're crazy? It means somebody said, "I don't understand where you're coming from." That's what crazy means.
Right.
So they're basically saying, "I don't get you. You're in my world. You're disrupting me. And you're also trying to break through to me that there are other things that I don't want to consider. And so I'd rather you weren't here." So they lock them up or medicate them or do whatever they do. Pretty soon there's not going to be enough medication to go around, and people are going to have to realize that there's more in this reality than is dreamt of in your philosophy, as Shakespeare put it.
Yeah, right on. Right. Well, one of the things that I love about, you know, what you wrote in part one was the idea that this is happening and we don't have to be conscious of it. Because for me, that really felt like there was this clarity of, you know, out of all the clairs, you know, clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient, I tend to feel and know. I mean, those are my two strong ones.
And the knowing one is called claircognizance.
That's
clear knowing. That's when
and
it is considered by most mystics as the highest form of experience. It's clear, just clear knowing. So at one point, you know, people used to come up to me after I would channel something, and they would say, "Now, how do you know this is true?" And I would go to the guides, and the guides would say, "He's asking the question backwards. First you know, then you know how you know. You have to reason backwards from knowing." Because people who aren't ready to know will never be able to know. It's when you're ready to know, all of a sudden you'll know how you know. It's just there. So like someone once said, For those who believe, no proof is necessary. For those who don't believe, no proof is available.
There's never enough proof.
Yeah,
right.
Nothing is ever enough.
Right.
And
well,
that by good purpose, because if they were to allow that truth in, it would seriously disrupt their journey at that point, you know. The best back in the 1970s was fundamentalist Christianity, where I put everything God in a book and hung out and did what I did, and I loved it. There was a lot of good things to it, and then I reached a place where it just didn't work for me in that limited format. Like I say,
right.
I carry with me the best of what I brought through there, and whatever else I just sort of left on the shelf for somebody else if they want to use it. It's like a book, you know, bookshelf. You say, take the books you like, leave the others. You know that there somebody's going to work with them.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And you don't have to fight it, you know. You don't have to argue against it. You don't have to put it down, and you don't have to control it. You just go, it is, and I am, and move on.
Yeah.
And that's that neutrality that's the key to traveling in the multiverse. Well, we hardly even got through chapter one here, or series one.
And I didn't want to rush it. I didn't want to take a half an hour for chapter two because, you know, this is such good stuff. And I had spoken to you about potentially, you know, doing another show at your convenience. You know, it can be a couple of months from now, whatever.
It could be, yeah. We'll know the timing, just like we knew the timing for this.
Yeah, right on.
And it'd be interesting
right
to know what, you know, other people who phone in or whatever they do, whether they talk in the chat room or whatever, what their response to it is. You'll probably be able to let me know.
Oh, absolutely, I can let you know. People,
and then
that'll give us
an indication as to where we need to go next with it if we do.
Okay.
Because you're a master of being able to choose your topics and your focuses. I mean, the show's really a hoppin' show.
Oh,
that's why I like to come here.
Oh, you're beautiful. Well, yeah, I just follow that river. You know, that I just follow what I know.
Exactly.
But listen, can you share? Because are you still doing sessions over the phone?
Well, I haven't done so many because I have some other projects I've been working on.
Okay.
But if there ever is anybody who feels like they need to have one, they can do that.
Okay.
They can just email me at daniel@reconnections.net, or they can come to the site at www.reconnections.net, or the Star Child site is www.thestarchildren.com.
And also you can find Daniel Jacobs, he's a friend on my Facebook, so you can, are you, or do you
on
have,
Facebook?
Are you
yes,
still,
I'm on Facebook, you can look
And you
me.
Can still have room for friends and all?
Oh yeah,
I haven't
been around that long, and
I
know there are people out
have.
There who go, I'm all friended out, and I say, well, just frag out another self,
well,
and
exactly.
tell everybody I'm over here now. The man of many Facebooks.
Yeah, no, well, and you know what they end up doing? They just get a page called, it's a like page, where I believe there's no limit to the like pages, and they just post on that. So, this was fabulous. Organic, I love it. I love how you share. You are a river. Your wisdom just flows, and it, you know, take little eddies with the stories and the metaphors. I mean, I feel great. I'm very much excited. I know Transportals 2 will come in, and you're absolutely right. In the divine time, you know, we'll be open to it. You know, many blessings. Thank you so much for coming tonight and
thank
and
you,
sharing.
Goldie, and thanks to everyone for their interest and listening in, because your energy was felt here. We felt you here, and to those who will be listening on the recording too, I know you have an archive, right?
Oh, yeah. And I
so there's
and
an
I
archive
have...
out there, so if people didn't get a chance to hear, you know, that's just they call it a tape machine, but it's all one time. Everything's
Tune
in and enjoy it. We can feel you here too in the future.
Yeah, totally. Oh, well, you're fantastic, and thank you again for everything. I will definitely, you know, share all the comments and stuff, and they're always shared with me. I have, and my group is from all over the world, which I really like. It feels
That's what
I guess,
Facebook too, because it's so over the world, and it's having been translated into several languages and hearing from people in different cultures too. We just added the Russian language to it. and that was very
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, I saw that. That's awesome.
The Russian portal, and then, of course, we've had the Spanish portal in South America. It's filled with passionate people who love this stuff. So
yeah.
Anyway, it's just thank you so much, Goldie. You're just a supporter, and bless you.
Oh, back at you. Thank you. Thank you. You're beautiful. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I'll be back on Monday night with Janine for another Mystical Mother Earth show. You guys have a fantastic weekend. I love you all. Stay amazing. And, you know, don't forget to share your multiversal travels with me and Daniel. All right, everybody. Have a great night. Good night. Think. I can't get the button to work. Okay. My outro doesn't want to work. So I guess I'm just going to say goodnight and end the show. I love you guys. Thank you so much for coming. GoldenHawkFeather@yahoo.com, Facebook GoldenHawk, and anotherrealityshow.com for all the archives. All right, everybody. Have a great night. Take care. Bye now.